Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. It means a lot. Seriously. I've been producing this show for a while now, and I've come to really, really look forward to these moments of being able to sit in front of this microphone. And I don't feel much better at doing it than when I first started. And I felt like a sure ignoramus when I did right begin. But I do feel that there is a certain momentum in what I've been trying to build ideologically here. So I want to take this time to say thank you to each and every one of you who is here listening to me right now. So thank you. You're very special. You're an important person. This week's been trying. I seem to have bruised a rib, which is astoundingly painful. I don't know if any of you have ever bruised your torso. So I've had a lot more training and physical composure with life's incessant challenges to surmount. Every single day is full of opportunities. These opportunities are new challenges that are there to encourage your personal growth. I've been reading a lot of this guy named Abraham Maslow, and some of you might remember some of his ideas if you ever took a psychology class or a sociology class. Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a super big principle that stuck in my brain and is glued to the man. But I found his writings to be quite endearing. He mentions Taoism frequently, and he seems to be a kindred spirit, if you know what I mean. So Maslow says that growth orientation, and growth is going to be unique towards every individual, is built off of our human desire systems, but in a much more abstract way than a magnet. You know, it's not sheer animal magnetism where something is geared towards something. You know, for Maslow, growth comes from seeking different experiences because they become more desirous naturally. And he calls people who somehow do this to be self-actualized persons. Now, in a way, he used as an example, like a child when learning language. A child becomes bored with things that used to excite them, especially if teaching is done right and fear doesn't become an opponent. A child is consistently seeking bigger and bigger stimuli to become more and more excited about. And this is Maslow's growth principle. It's how we're meant to become bored and not satiated with normality and conformism, if that makes any sense. So, when it comes to growing, the opposite mindset of that would be this deficit mindset, which isn't exactly need-based, it's needfulness in a way. And so when something becomes at a deficit, that means that we are lacking something, or we have deemed ourselves as self-lacking, which isn't always a reasonable assertion about any single being, including ourselves. So we have this argument of fear inside of us because of this acclaimed lack. And then we have this desire for increasingly complicated and interesting stimuli. So I've been thinking a lot about this concept a lot. Mr. Maslow's been buried in my head. And I do think that we humans are molded by fire. There's a catharsis that comes from damage, and that we are made from all of our past occurrences that leave scars upon us. And I was sitting with my therapist this week, and she spent a lot of time trying to convince me that I have trauma, which is something that I know, but it's something that I know, but I don't like. I don't allow it to surface, and my defense mechanisms are so strong that it's hard for me to talk about those kind of things, which I think is very human. And I'm sure that you relate in some way, shape, or form, even though it's a vulnerable thing to try to admit. So, knowing that we have these scars and not just trying to outlast them is part of growth. Whereas a deficit-based thinking is going to try to wear long sleeves so that you don't see the scarification. And the scars could be laden on our psyches and not just on our bodies, even if our bodies happen to be healthy now. So we have to be aware of the things that have made us who we are. And sometimes that takes the direct intervention of some sort of professional. And sometimes that just necessitates a specific situation that might be more trauma, more difficult, more challenge. But these things precipitate. And if we are able to take hold of our base humanity and our base immensity and ability, we can take these situations and we can grow from them. And this has happened time and time again. There are so many examples everywhere for any person of any background to find somebody within their own background that can be a significant model to show you how they have gotten and been able to take advantage of all of their difficulties. So just look around a little bit, and I feel that you'll see it because I see it all the time. I find it in my family. You know, I find it in my workforce. I find it in strangers. I find it everywhere. And of course, this is because I believe in this principle of this thing called love. And in the past, I've used this idea of unconditional love, but maybe that has too much baggage on it as well. Maslow has his idea called unneeding love, which I find very intriguing. So you have this deficit-based thinking where you see yourself lacking. And so then when you look at other people, if you have this hole within you that you've inserted, then you see other beings not as ends in themselves and not as a whole, complete being. You know, if you're seeking love and you're needing love, then you see these things, not people, as avenues to give love. And that's not fair. And when I read this from him, it felt very close to my thinking and my feelings on the matter. we can accept somebody wholly, and we don't need anything from them, when we don't need any satiety, any comfort, any safety, we don't need anything from a person, we can truly witness them and see them in their wholeness. And there is a way to love somebody without needing anything from them. This unneeding love. Safety is a specific deficit that is very human. It's very low on the hierarchy of needs, if you would ever want to look that up. Safety is this feeling of security, and it's something that I struggle with concurrently throughout a long period of my adulthood, perhaps even in my childhood, and maybe it's just a very human element to have insecurity. And we throw that word around at people all the time, and a lot of the times there might be flagrant examples of insecurity, but primarily security comes from an allowance of the environment. And Maslow has a lot of very intriguing examples about children, and some of it may be dated, but I found it interesting still. But children will only be curious, and children will only seek things and even seek to go after other needs. Safety needs are met. This is very obvious, like even at playground parks. Most children are cautious, and they stay close to the mother, and they stay close, or the father, in my happenstance, and they stay close to their caregiver. And then once they know that they're safe, then they sort of hop and do these little skips outside of the safety bubble. And who's to say that we adults don't act in similar fashions? I think it would be easy to develop adult thinking patterns based off of our child patterns, you know? And whilst thinking about this, you know, it had me thinking about my son, which my son's sense of security with me, he was never put in place because maybe it was when I got custody of him, because I got custody of him at such a late point in life when he was almost 2 years old, you know, so I was never there for a lot of the really important, close compassion giving that's needed for attachment. And that is usually primarily given from mom. This comes from skin on skin contact and all those sort of things. And I had a couple months where I was allowed to be part of his, you know, life. But when I got custody of him, it was a long time after that, and it was a tragic and traumatic experience for him to be shuffled like that from one home to the next overnight. And so we've always had this challenge of security because I don't think I've quite convinced him that he's safe with me. You know, and maybe that's part of being a parent, is this persuasive task where we are consistently trying to persuade ourselves and our children that we love them and that they can trust us. And trust is such a major, major principle when it comes to being a human. And having trust in ourselves and having trust in our world and being able to tell ourselves that I trust this world to keep me where I'm at and that I'm in the right place. And this is exactly where I need to be for the next one, the next moment. That's all we have, is all these moments and this eternal now where each moment is falling off and then falling away so quickly. And what I've always found to help mark this entropy of time as reality slips over the waterfall, on and on and on and on, is these big moments. And Mr. Maslow called them his peak moments. He said that there's peak experiences, that we all have, and some of these might be circumstantial based on a big blast of activity and excitement, you know, like a marriage or the birth of a child. You know, when I was younger, I was always obsessed and consumed by the fervor of holidays. And I remember thinking when I was very, very, very young, these seemingly massive gaps of time between each holiday, because in between, the excitement was always normalcy. And as I've explained often on the show before, my biggest fear is boredom. Always will be, is the ever-present need, this deficit-leaning creature that's within me, this needful thing that constantly needs to be filled with activity. But Mr. Maslow says that we live, in essence, for our peak experiences. And in a way, I think he's right. But I'd also like to be wary of living only for what is considered peak. A lot of my peak experiences as an adult especially have been chemical. And psychedelia has shown me so many different heavens and hells that I found myself leaning on this inner brilliance to get through a lot of my normal feeling life that is inarguably uncontestable, and we can't get away from it. There's absolutely no way that we can ever get away from feeling bored at some point. And no matter how brilliant a peak experience is, it always ends. As the Taoist texts have said, at the end of every day is a moon. At the end of every sunrise is a sunset. Everything that goes up goes down. And all the other hoopla. But what can we do to capitalize on our peak experiences? I think that sometimes that there's been certain settings where peak experience has been more prevalent and more possible. You know, I definitely feel that I've had pockets of time where I felt more brilliance, and then I've had pockets of maybe just perspective, really, where I felt more dullness. And over time, I feel that it's trying to flatten that curve so we have less of a tug and fro. We don't have this pulling back and forth, really, between these two considered dual opposites. We can intersperse our life comfortably with peak experiences. You know, and part of that comes with spontaneity, because we can't choose our peak experiences. With chemicals, the magic is not dose dependent. There's no amount you can take. I really don't think you can measure out a dosage and expect things to happen. You can take a large dose and expect to shift yourself and expect a big head change if you take more, but it's hard to aim for a certain experience. And usually the medicine gives you what you need, not what you want. You know, this can also be said for how moments come into our life that we have to handle and we have to be able to grasp. And we have to be able to be aware of in order to give them license to be existent and to become our peak experiences. We can be ignorant of amazing, brilliant things that happen to us just because of our perspective. In relationships, this can get rather complicated with children and our relationships between parent and child, there's so much resistance to these whims of will and this display of power, as if two gorillas are constantly checking things. You know, this may be different with females and their boys and males with their girls and all the other different opportunities that nature has provided us. You know, not to say it's all as heavily testosterone laden as my difficulties with my son have seemed. But when we have our relationships, we have our perspectives and these intentions and our assumptions of what our relationships are, such as everything I just shared about my son, were all assumptions about how we are. And I can become ignorant and jaded to the very wonderful things that he gives me sometimes. You know, and it's amazing. So just consider some of these thoughts, some of these functions of thinking as you go throughout your week. These are considerations that I'm going to keep considering. Before I go on to my quotations, I want to tell you that I think you're a lovely being. Not to shower you with compliments again, but you really need to consider how amazing you are and how worthy you are and how you can give yourself license to be amazing and give yourself license to be. Give yourself all these allowances that are necessary in order to be a completely functioning, loving being. Allow yourself to be. You are. Since I've been speaking about him all morning long, I might as well give you a couple direct quotations from Mr. Maslow. This is from his book, Towards the Psychology of Being, second edition. This was published in 1968. I don't know a lot about his personal history, so here we go. The healthy person, not having a deficiency, does not need to receive love except in steady small maintenance doses, and he may not even do without these for a period of time. But if motivation is entirely a matter of satisfying deficits and thus getting rid of needs, then a contradiction appears. Satisfaction of the need should cause it to disappear, which is to say that people who have stood in satisfying love relationships are precisely the people who should be less likely to give and to receive love. But clinical study of healthier people who have been love need satiated showed that although they need less to receive love, they are more able to give it. In this sense, they are more loving people. This finding in itself exposes the limitation of ordinary motivation theory and indicates the necessity for metamotivation theory. Number one, be love, which is belonging love, is welcomed into consciousness and is completely enjoyed. Since it is non-possessive and is admiring rather than needing, it makes no trouble and is practically always pleasure-giving. Two, it can never be sated. It may be enjoyed without an end. It usually grows greater rather than disappearing. It is intrinsically enjoyable. It is an end rather than means. 3. The be-love experience is often described as being the same as and having the same effects as an aesthetic experience or the mystic experience. 4. The therapeutic and psychagogic effects of experiencing be-love are very profound and widespread. Similar are the characterological effects of the relatively pure love of a healthy mother for her baby, or the perfect love of their God that some mystics have described. Be-love is, beyond the shadow of a doubt, a richer, higher, more valuable subjective experience than deficiency love, which all be-lovers have also previously experienced. This preference is also reported by many other older, more average subjects, many of whom experience both kinds of love simultaneously in various combinations. 6. D-love, deficiency love, can be gratified. The concept gratification hardly applies at all to the admiration love of another person's admiration worthiness and love worthiness. 7. In B-love, there's a minimum of anxiety hostility. For all practical human purposes, it may even be considered to be the absent. There can, of course, be anxiety for the other. In D-love, one must always expect some degree of anxiety and hostility. Then he goes on. So very sciencey-minded and very empirical, but I still like him quite a bit, honestly. So that's about the end of my spiel for today. I'm going to go grab Odo. We'll see how his week's been, what he has as far as opinions go.
Hello, I don't really want to talk today, so...
Odin's been feeling kind of sick. He had a little situation. You want to explain it?
No, I just don't really talk.
It's okay.
Okay, bye.
I really appreciate you giving me just a second, though, but...
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, Daddy, I have a question.
What's your question? I don't think so. We'll think about it. You're doing good. Go clean your room, maybe.
Okay.
Bye.